Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, this is Mac, and you are listening to Mac's Musings. If you're on the West Coast, though, like my guest tonight, then it will be afternoon for you. And my guest tonight is Kyle Hester, and hopefully we'll be talking to him in just a minute. It should be dialing soon. There we go.
Hello, hello.
Hello, Kyle, this is Mac.
Well, good afternoon.
Yeah, good afternoon to you. Good evening for me. And how are you?
Oh, good evening. I'm doing fantastic. How are you?
Oh, I'm just fantastic as well. So I guess we should just, like, jump right into it. Oh, excuse me. Losing my voice. Now, I know that you were in, you started in a drama class, like, in junior year of high school. And is that when you knew that you wanted to start going into the movies to be a filmmaker?
You know, I actually didn't know that I wanted to do film until later. It was kind of all about theater through high school, and then it was like I was doing theater in Atlanta, and it was going to be doing like a national tour, and how to succeed in business without really trying. And and I had the opportunity to audition for Andersonville, and so which was the John Frankenheimer directed that, and so it was like I gotta take the leap, you know. So, but yeah, the initial thing that made me want to do film was Jack Nicholson's performance in The Shining.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he was great in that, that's for sure.
He was. Yeah, I think that he's always been brilliant, but as a young person seeing that performance, it really struck that nerve of like, that's really cool, man.
Now, I know that you've done other stuff besides acting. You worked with and you constructed miniatures. You've been a set director. You worked in art department. You've been the art director. Now, do you like to do those kind of things, or do you do them when they're necessary, or is it a combination of both?
I think that what it really came down to for me was wanting to just be on sets. So it's like whatever I could do to be in film and working on sets and just being a part of the magic. So, and it just so I've done like many things, just like you were saying, lots of set construction and special effects and miniatures and all kinds of stuff, and it's all super interesting. And I think that it has definitely helped me as an actor and now like as a producer. So it's good to know like as much as you can. So, and I certainly have enjoyed the process.
Oh, well, that's good. Cause I know some people, cause everybody has their own thing. Not everybody likes to do the same thing. And some actors really love to do a bunch of other stuff, and some only do it when it's necessary. Cause when you're in the indie film industry, it's kind of a given that you're going to do more than just one thing when you start making a film.
Oh yeah. Yeah, for sure. I mean, you're going to wear a lot of hats, especially if you're making the film, like producing it. So,
right.
Yeah. It's like, sometimes it's nice just to be able to focus on one thing and not be like, scattered around. But, basically, we just do what we got to do to make it all happen.
Right, right. Well, yeah, if you want to make your movie, you got to do what you got to do.
Yeah, right?
Now, in 1992, now I'm mainly going by IMDb, so if they have anything wrong, it's not my fault. But feel free to correct me, of course, because, like I said, I get it from IMDb. They have your first acting credit. they have your first acting credit as Rock and Roll Fantasy. So tell us about working on that.
That was my very first film. And the funny story about that was that was also David Lapp's first film. So for those who don't know who David Ladd is, he is a Sharknado guy. So he has Asylum films.
Yeah.
So all those Asylum films, that's David Ladd. So that was his very first film. And so it was just kind of funny that it was like my very, very first film is like, you know, basically I think I was supposed to be like a first year college, you know, panty raid, you know, or something like that. But it was total campy and a lot of fun.
Good. That's always nice to have a good experience. I know that doesn't always happen. Sometimes you have rotten experiences or so-so experiences. So having a nice time is always good.
Yeah, it definitely is.
Now, I know you're a dancer. And so I was just curious if in this one that I have picked next, if you actually danced in this. It's called The Last Dance from 1996.
No. Last Dance with Sharon Stone. That was Sharon Stone was on death row. So this was like that super dramatic piece that she did. And so it was about her, you know. Yeah. Yeah, I think there was another movie, The Last Dance, that did have dancing in it. But, different deals.
Yeah, that isn't the one. Okay, got it. Yeah, I was probably thinking of that other one. So you got to work with Sharon Stone. And did you actually have any scenes with her? Because I know lots of times you can be in somebody with a movie and never even see them if you don't have scenes together.
Yeah, no, it's funny. Yes, yeah, we did have a scene together. My character was the one where she was on death row, so my character was the one that was killed by her. So, like, me and my girlfriend in the film were killed by Sharon Stone, and that's what the whole film was about. So I have a YouTube channel. You should check it out, Kyle Hester. Just look up Kyle Hester, and you'll find my YouTube channel on YouTube. And I did a video about the Sharon Stone, how basically, like, I am responsible for her career because, you know, if my character wasn't in the movie, then that movie wouldn't have happened, you know. So, because she killed me, and if she didn't kill me, then there's no movie. So, yeah, but anyway, it's a funny video.
Yeah, I'm going to have to check that out.
Cool.
Now, I did pick out a few that you didn't act in, but you did the other stuff, like what we were talking about just a few minutes ago. In 2004, you did Team America World Police, where you did miniatures. So tell us about doing that, and was it the first time that you worked with miniatures?
I was working with some other guys. We had a company called Designs. And we did a lot of different stuff for films, made miniatures and models and all kinds of stuff. So that wasn't the first time for the miniatures, but basically that was the biggest for sure. Cause we built all of the third scale sets for the film, and it was, you know, all the Paris set and the Egypt, you know, the New York alley, like all that stuff, you know, that the puppets are on. So yeah, we did. We built it all. It was super cool to work on.
Yeah, it does sound like that would be a lot of fun. I mean, I've worked around with miniatures, not in a film sense, but I've photographed them because I got that from watching Star Wars, where they would move the miniatures around and then photograph them, and I've done that, where I photograph them, and then once I put the photographs together, then it looks like they're moving, which, of course, they're not.
Oh, yeah, yes, and stop motion. That is a lot of work.
Yeah,
that's cool.
It is. I never actually had my work in a movie, but you know, I wasn't that old. I was only a teenager. So for me, it was like a big deal. I was like, hey, this is almost as good as what's in the movie. It was nowhere near what was in the movie. But, you know, when you're a teenager.
Well, yeah. No, that's awesome.
Now, in 2008, you did a film called The Hanging Tree. That, well, it was a short, technically. So tell us about working on that one.
Wow, you know what? I don't think you're the first person that's ever asked me about that short. That was a lot of fun. Nick Borges, he was a director. I think now he's working in the industry still. Yeah, he's kicking butt in his own right. But yeah, when he was doing some directing, and he did that one. And another one called Kill Quincy Wright. And, yeah, those are super cool. So I don't know if those are on YouTube or if they're available to watch. But, yeah, I played a preacher in that one. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Nick's he's a really great guy and a great director, too.
So what was that movie about? I mean, it's about a tree that they hang people from, I'm assuming.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of poignant for these times. It's just about like Southern racism, basically, and it was the hanging tree about an innocent man that was lynched. So it's definitely not a happy piece, but it was certainly poignant and moving.
Yeah, I'm sure it was. A lot of these things, people, like the general public, I mean, they don't get a chance to see them because if they're not, like, out in the theaters to where everybody can see them, if they only get a limited release, then most people don't have a way to see them. And then they get not exactly lost, but they kind of get lost because there's really no way to see them unless you know the filmmakers.
Oh, yeah.
And even then, even if you know the filmmakers, sometimes it's hard to see them. And I know because I have a lot of filmmaker friends, and I've asked them, hey, what about this film that you did? And they're like, I don't know how to get that. If you don't know, I certainly don't know.
That's funny. Yeah. Those may be on YouTube. I actually haven't done a search for those, but yeah, I will check that out.
Yeah, I guess I'm going to have to do that too to see. Now, since you mentioned it was on my list. Tell us about that Kill Quincy Wright, because I had it on my list, so it's funny that you mentioned it.
Kill Quincy Wright. That was. I played a really bad guy in that one. Kill Quincy Wright. It was basically about this director Nick. He had like kind of a through line of exposing racism. So this was another on that in that genre. So it was yeah. I think that basically my character was a Southern racist, and so you know I got to delve into that and the ugly truth, you know, of those things. So but yeah, it's an intense piece as well. I mean, yeah, Nick was definitely going for making impressions, you know, which he certainly did.
Yeah, well, those type of movies do need to get made because people need to see them.
Agreed. Absolutely.
I'm going a little back in time now. You did a miniseries called Andersonville. Now, that's another thing that I haven't seen, so you're going to have to let us know what that's about, like a synopsis, what it was like working on it, et cetera.
Andersonville was a TNT film. Directed by John Frankenheimer. It was a two-part, so I think that's why they call it a miniseries. Because it was so long, it's like three and a half hours for the two parts, so they just broke it up into two nights. But that was about the Andersonville prison camp in Andersonville, Georgia. And that was an incredible experience. I played three different speaking roles in that, and basically had like a tremendous opportunity, you know, right place, right time. And I was cast in the film for, I had like one line in with one character. And then I ended up, because okay, here's how it goes. John Frankenheimer, like in the beginning of the day, he was like, all right, let's rehearse this scene. You know, so then I had been reading the sides all morning. So I was familiar with what was going to be happening during the day. And this one actor who was in, you know, in the scene wasn't remembering his lines. Like he kept messing up. So John gets up and he's like, God damn it. Does anybody know these lines? And so I raised my hand, and because I was familiar with him, and he said, come on over here. Let's read this. And so then I stood up and read the scene with the John Frankenheimer, who, if you don't know who that is, definitely Google him.
Oh, I know who he is.
Yeah. And I'm sure you do. I'm speaking to your audience.
Sorry.
no worries. So basically, you know, he said, all right, I'm going to use you a lot in this film. And then I ended up playing three different speaking roles in it, and was on a set for like 3 months and in the rain and mud and in a replica Andersonville prison camp, which was quite the experience.
Wow. That sounds very exciting.
It was a wonderful, wonderful time.
Let me see. What did I have next? Oh, again, back in the 90s, you did a video game, the Pony Express Rider. Now, I think that was the first video game that you did. So tell us about doing that, because a lot of people don't know what all that involves to work on a video game.
I think when green screen was just becoming popular in usage, and so basically, you know, you're obviously acting, you know, as a character, and then like the whole set is green, you know, like the boxes where like a bar would be, so that like this is the bar, you can't walk through that because there's a bar right there, and so they would put these kind of like green boxes or whatever representing what the set is like when it's in the computer. I played Frank James in that. That was a lot of fun. That was a lot of fun. That was my first green screen experience. So it was definitely a trip, like working in a world of green where there's nothing there. So you just have to, like, you know, they tell you what's there and you go, okay, cool. That's where we are. So here, let's go, you know? Yeah, it was good.
Good. Glad that you had a good time working on that one. And it is interesting, the video games, because I know a few people that have worked on them, and they just have a blast. Now, that's not to say that everybody does, but the people that I know have a blast working on them. So
that's awesome.
I think it was 2006, going back to something other than acting, you did El Mascarado Massacre. You were the set director. Tell us about working on that.
That was a lot of blood. That's what I remember from that. There was a lot of fake blood in that one. So, yeah, when you're doing like a horror film with lots of fake blood, it's like there's lots of cleaning up. So it's like you go from, you know, and cut, and then all of a sudden, you know, this scene that just happened, now you have this huge mess that you have to clean up. So I remember cleaning up lots of blood from that particular film. Yeah, it was fun to work on, but that sticks out for sure.
Yeah, the blood is always fun to work with. I have a couple of really close friends that work in doing special effects, and one of them has even, well, actually a couple of them have won awards, but the one, he loves working in blood almost to the point where it's a little bit creepy.
Oh, yeah.
And but he's really good at it, because when you look at it, it's like, because I do a lot of things in my life as far as, you know, like you're an actor, but you also do other stuff. Well, I'm a nurse, but I also do other things as well. Like I'm a semi-professional reviewer of movies and a couple other things too. But being a nurse, I've looked at some of his stuff, and then I...
You're blanked out. I am not hearing you if you're talking. I don't know if you hit mute or something. Hello? Are you there? Hello? I can't hear you at all. Do you want to, if you can hear me, do you want to call me back? Some technical difficulties I see. Hello?
I'm not reaching him, so we'll try dialing, but I'm not dialing. Hopefully this will be it.
Okay, I hear you.
You can hear me now? Okay.
Yeah, I can
hear you. Who knows what happened there? I mean, usually Blog Talk Radio has some problems, but that's the first time I've had that particular problem. So I'm like,
you know,
it's
okay. I've had Blog Talk Radio go out before. So yeah, they have some glitches in there sometimes.
Yeah, they do. I'm glad that you understand it. Most people do. You know, they don't have a problem with it. But every once in a while, there's a few guests that, you know, they've never been on Blog Talk Radio, and so they get all bent out of shape about it. The only I wasn't upset or anything about it. It's just that I was trying to talk and dial your number at the same time. So it was just kind of funny. And so, sorry that your show is going to be a little bit messed up because of that, because I'm going to be talking, just trying to find stuff to talk. But I could hear you fine.
Oh, you could?
So, yeah.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. I couldn't hear anything. It was like silent.
Oh, wow.
So
whenever I send you the recorded version, you should be able to hear that, how, you know, I was talking and you were talking and I was saying I can hear you, but you were saying hello, is anybody there? Okay. Well, now we're back on, so we'll just move on, if that's okay
all
with
right.
you.
Yeah, of course.
Okay. Well, you're the guest, so I like to do what the guest wants to do, but I would assume that you would want to keep going. Now, in 20... we had talked about the video game already. In 2008, you did some more miniatures for a short called Expendable. So tell us about that.
Oh, wow. It's so funny. I haven't, like, gone through my IMDb in such a long time. It's like, oh, Blast from the Past. Okay. Cool. Expendable. That was we did a miniature of a building and then blew it up. So that's sometimes that's what would be done, like, before, you know, they started doing everything digital. They would actually blow things up. So we built, I forget like what the scale was, but I don't know, the building was probably 2 feet tall, you know, when it came down to it. And then, you know, took it out into the desert and put some gasoline and stuff like that, or whatever they use. I'm not sure what exactly they did. It was, I didn't do it personally. I don't have a T1 license, but yeah. So the guy that, like, blows things up, like, stuck his little things in there and blew it up. So that was also fun to do, because who doesn't like blowing miniatures up, you know?
I love doing that. we had this local show called, it started before I was old enough to even remember, and even people all over the country have heard about it. Not everybody, of course, but there's this guy called Goulardi. It was a local thing where he would introduce movies. And then there was one that kind of copied off him, and he called himself the Ghoul, because he basically was the same thing instead of Goulardi. But the reason why I bring them up is because they both did that. They would set out these miniatures, and then they would blow them up. And the Ghoul, he had this frog, and he called it Froggy, and he was always blowing up that poor frog.
That's funny.
Yeah, and people love that. I mean, as a kid, yeah. I just love that. I love that when he'd set Froggy out there and he'd go to blow it up, and then, of course, I wanted to try it. So I got my own Froggy, and I was blowing it up. Okay, in 2016, now I've seen this, and it was a really good movie, and you were really good in it, called The Chair with, of course, the late, great Roddy Piper. You acted in it. You were also a co-executive producer. So tell us about working on that one.
Well, thank you very much for the compliment. That was intense. I came on as an actor on that and ended up producing it, which was a wild experience. It was actually my first film producing. And so that, yeah, it was like learning on the fly kind of thing. But it was, Roddy Piper was amazing, and it was great to work with Noah Hathaway. He was awesome, and yeah, it's like, it's got an amazing cast. So yeah, it's so if you, for those who have not seen The Chair, if you like dark psychological horror, definitely check it out, because it's worth the watch. And Roddy Piper gives, I think, one of his best performances, one of his like best subtle performances. And it was just a thrill to share the stage with those guys. And that's actually where I met Zach Galligan on that. And I asked him to be in the film that we have that's being post-production right now, called Preacher Six. But so that's where I met Zach Galligan and Naomi Grossman, who's also in The Chair. So that's how she ended up in Preacher Six as well.
Oh, cool. Well, since you mentioned it, normally I don't do this unless the guest mentions something that's out of sequence. And since you did, we'll go ahead and talk about it, because I've just found that's the best thing to do. Preacher Six, which is in, I believe it's still in post-production. You're the producer and actor. And we've got plenty of time, so I know this is a newer one that you want people to know about and tell them, you know, how they can, if they want to invest in it and things like that. So you've got a good 30 minutes. So talk about Preacher 6 and talk about it for almost as much as long as you want. Not quite, but
right on, right on. It's all good. Preacher 6 is it's about a small town preacher who comes to the big city and ends up fighting demons in a literal sense. So it's definitely like an action suspense, little bit of thriller in there. Great characters. I would say go to my YouTube channel is Kyle Hesterland. So if you just look up Kyle Hesterland, and we have three of the trailers. Two Preacher 6 are there, and so it's kind of like you can see the progression of what we've done with the film, like from beginning to kind of where we are now with you know, post-production and whatnot. And I think it's going to be super exciting, and everyone was amazing, and we have such great actors in it. So Peter Murnick, he was on Justified and JAG, and I actually met him and Carmen Argenziano on the set of Andersonville. So that is how it's like, there's all basically like what I did with Preacher 6 was, it's like, all right, who are all the awesome actors that I've worked with? And like, let's get them all in this movie. So I didn't have a casting director. It was basically, my wife is the screenwriter of Preacher 6, and she was amazing. So we had this amazing film, you know, and it was our opportunity to fill it with all the best people that I had worked with and, you know, as an actor before. So it's super cool. So I highly recommend checking it out. And also you can give it a follow on at Preacher 6. And that is on Twitter. And we have a website, preacher6.com. And you can check out the whole cast and all that good stuff. But yeah, basically the way that we're going to go forward with it is trying to raise money through the Patreon, trying to get it done like $3 at a time, because I know that like nobody has, you know, money right now to do much investing just because of the times that we're in. So I figure that that people have $3, you know. So if you support independent film and if you find it in your heart, then please check out the Patreon. It's at / Kyle Hester Actor Guy on Patreon, and you'll get some behind the scenes stuff and some pictures from the different films that I've talked about in this interview. It got some behind the scenes stuff that you won't see anywhere else. So, and yeah, I just am super grateful for everyone's support in making all these films, because without fan support, none of these films would happen. Like, you wouldn't have, The Chair wouldn't happen. You know, Preacher 6 would not have happened. Zombie with a Shotgun, that wouldn't have happened. So, yeah, it's just like now is the kind of a time when like fans of film really do make these films possible.
Well, and it really helps the fans as well, because then they get to feel like they're part of the process. Well, which they are, because like mm-hmm. you say, if it wasn't for them, it wouldn't be possible. And so they get that feeling of, hey, I'm part of this movie. And then especially if it's somehow in there that their name is on it, because each filmmaker does their rewarding part differently. Mm-hmm. You know, like different amounts for getting your name on the movie. With some of them, it's a low amount. With some of them, it's a higher amount. But no matter what the amount, people just get excited because they're like, oh, I got my name on this movie. Now, me personally, I it doesn't really like excite me that much. I mean, it's cool, and I've showed my mm-hmm. name to other people when it's on films. But one time I had given somebody some help, not money-wise, but I helped them, like I introduced them to somebody that they ended up putting into their film. And so they mm-hmm. wanted to thank me at the end, and they were asking me if it was okay. And I said, well, in all honesty, I would rather that you do it as a rest in peace thing for a dear friend of mine, and they agreed to that. And then what they ended up doing was they did both. They put the Rest in Peace in, for my friend, and then they also mm-hmm. put my name on it. So it just was, you know, wonderful. And
that's
but,
really
you know,
cool.
The reason why I bring that up. Yeah, it was. It was very nice because they didn't have to do that. Of course not. But that's my thing is that it really does give people a feeling of, wow, my name was in that. Or wow, my friend was in that. Like, if I look in there and I know somebody, because I know so many people now that have been in these movies, but some of them aren't, like, really, really big stars. But I'll still look at it and go, wow. And like, no, I don't know you personally. I'm talking about you, my guest, Kyle Hester.
Right,
but,
yeah.
But I do know you through Facebook and Twitter. So whenever I see anything about you, I'll go, hey, yeah, Kyle Hester. And I do that with people that I know. I'm like, wow, somebody I know. So, yeah, that happens with people. It probably happens with you, too. It's like,
oh,
mean,
yeah, for
I know.
Sure. I mean, it's such a, it is such really, like, the film industry is a small world. It's a small community of people that, like, if you are in the business long enough, you will work with many of the same people, at least in the same city, if you're in the same city. So, yeah, it's a great community of artists.
It is. I agree. And I didn't mean to talk so much during your show. Hopefully,
no,
you don't
this
mind.
Is your show. I'm just here for the ride. I appreciate being here.
Well, I actually consider it the other way, but sometimes it doesn't happen all the time. Sometimes I get in a talking mood. It's mainly perpetuated by the guest of how they're reacting to being on the show and talking about their stuff and talking in general, because there are some guests that they really don't like the chit-chat type of thing, even though I tell them that that's really what my show is like, because I don't
right.
really ask questions per se. I just say, like, okay, this movie, talk about it. And they know that, but yet they get on the show and it's like they forget. But I've never had a person that was not nice or that didn't like being on the show. It's just like what we said, every person is different. So I just try to go with the flow with whatever the guest wants.
Yeah,
but
well,
that all
I think
said,
going with the flow is probably the best way to go anyway, you know, because it's like, what are you going to do? You know what I mean? It's like we all
yeah.
deal with whatever situation is in front of us. So that's kind of it, you know? And here we all are.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Well, I did want to go ahead and talk about this one, even though it's a little further, it's not way back, but you had mentioned it, so we'll go ahead and talk about it, or rather, you're going to talk about it. Zombie with a Shotgun, where you were actor and producer on that one. So tell us about Zombie with a Shotgun. I like the name, by the way.
Yeah, hey, you know what? That's awesome. That is all Hilton Ruiz. He was he's the creator, writer of it, and I believe I had just done The Chair, and I was starting to think about like raising money for Preacher Six, and then I talked to Hilton, and so basically we were like, hey man, what's going on? Yeah, what's going on, man? You know, hey, you making a movie? That's pretty cool. You got Zombie with a Shotgun. That's awesome. You know, what are you doing with it? And he said that, you know, he was working on trying to get financing for it. And I know that's such a runaround and so difficult to do, to actually get financing like through a bank or through like, you know, big investors, unless you know people, you know, that just like want to invest
right.
in films. It's difficult to do it that way. And he said, yeah, I've been getting the runaround from people and people like to talk and, you know, and I'm like, yeah, this is true, you know? And so I said, well, why don't we just do it? I said, let's just launch a fundraiser. You know, let's do the Kickstarter and Indiegogo thing. And he was like, all right, let's do it. So then probably 2 weeks later, we had the first fundraiser launched for Zombie with a Shotgun. And then 3 months after that, I was in New York and shooting that. So, yeah, and that's another thing. It's just like without the fan support, like that would not exist, you know. So, yeah, independent film and art and in itself is it's like without the audience or without the support, it would not exist. So I'm like beyond grateful for all of the support that we've gotten for these films. And, you know, it's like trying to figure out how these films can make money back for investors now is certainly challenging, you know? So it's like, it's almost like the crowdfunding way to do it, where the, you know, everybody gets like signed stuff and that kind of thing. It's like the way to make it back, because we're certainly not making money, you know, from Amazon Prime.
Right.
You know, it's like the Amazon Prime is like, I think it was a lot of people were expecting it to be something different than it is. You know, it's like, hey, I got a movie on Amazon. It's on Amazon Prime, you know. And then you realize it's like, oh, we got, you know, in this quarter got enough money to buy, you know, the crew pizza, you know, or something to that effect. So it's and so people have put a lot of kind of trust into that whole streaming for free situation, and it's just not really a viable thing if you want to make your money back, you know, or any money at all. Really. So, it's like it's just keeping up with how to do things and how to make a film, you know, and how to make a film profitable or even like break evenable, if that's a word, you know. So, yeah. So here we are, still doing it, you know, still on the film bike, you know, just got to keep pedaling.
Well, yeah, because, and especially being an independent, if you don't keep peddling, you're just going to go under, because it's not like the big wigs in Hollywood are going to come to your rescue or anything. You have to do it yourself. But there are so many indie movies that are just as good, and many of them are better than the big budget movies.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen a lot of them, and I'm sure that you have as well. Like Halloween, that's a favorite one that I like to use. Halloween, which was one of the most low-budget movies ever made at that time. I mean, you know, it was like $10,000 they did the movie for. And it was better than anything that Hollywood had at the time as far as, you know, horror movies. And there's other examples, too, but I just like using that one because it's like, really, the only thing that it had as far as, like, what the big-budget movies would have is it had a name actor, you know, Donald Pleasance, because he was a big deal at that time.
Right.
And Jamie Lee Curtis, she really wasn't anybody at the time, but she was, of course, Tony Curtis's daughter. And so, and Janet Leigh, of course, daughter. And so she was known in that way. So really that's all that it had as far as what a big budget movie would have. Other than that, it's like, the special effects weren't really there, but it worked. What they did worked. And that movie, as you know, ended up being really popular, and it's still a staple today that it's watched every Halloween. I watch it every Halloween.
Even if I just watch it. It's a classic. I mean, here's the thing. I mean, I think that, if you have the name and the ability for something to be seen, you know, and the ability for to let people know about it. And so that's the key. And I think that what people forget when you release a movie is that, like, you have to – how are you going to let people know about it? I mean, it's like I have a pretty big Twitter following, but, I mean, that's not enough, you know? So it's like you got to reach outside of what you think – you know, so you got to have an advertising budget, you know? And I think
right.
that's what people think. It's like, oh, I got it up on, you know, this platform and people are just going to find it. You know, it's like, well, good luck, you know, with all of like the bazillions of movies out there, you know, it's like, you gotta find a way to get it in front of people. So, you know, you gotta put those ad dollars into it, to get things rolling.
Well, yeah. And even if they're your friends, and I remind people of this simply because, and I'm not saying this to brag, I'm just saying it to, you know, get a point across. I have a lot of filmmaker friends, and I have to remind them that, you know, if you want me to help you in whatever way I can to promote your movie, well, then you have to let me know about it. I can't know what movie you've got going on if you don't tell me what it is. So if filmmakers out there, if you pass it along to your friends, they'll help you. They'll talk about it on Facebook. They'll talk about it on Twitter because that's the kind of thing that I do. I've shared for Preacher Six on not too much on Twitter because I don't use Twitter that much, but mm-hmm. when I share anything on Facebook, it automatically goes to Twitter anyway, so it doesn't matter. But I've
right.
shared a Facebook. I've shared about Preacher Six because you had told me about it when you first started doing it. And
mm-hmm.
I do that with my other friends. They tell me about some movie, and then I promote it for them. But I can't know about it. I can't promote it if I don't know about it.
Yeah. That's absolutely right. That's absolutely right. So, yeah, I think that that's, yeah, it's like there's a whole, the you know, show business. Like there's a business to the show part. And I think that, like, you know, when you go to, you know, film school and, you know, and those kinds of creative art schools, it's like you got to definitely have some business classes in there somewhere, you know, if you're going to be a part of making, you know, producing the films, you know, like how you're going to get it out. I mean, I'll tell you what I'm going to do for Preacher Six is we're going to have a DVD release. And that's like, I know that not everybody uses DVDs, but some, you know, some people do and love them. And so we're going to launch on DVD for probably like 2 months, you know, and that's the only way you're going to be able to see it. And then we're going to go to rental on Vimeo. So, and Vimeo, have you ever seen anything on Vimeo?
Oh, yes, I have. Yes.
Yeah. So Vimeo is one of the best kept secrets for filmmakers, you know, because you can set up your own Vimeo account and then also, you know, pay or have people rent your movie, you know, on the platform. And Vimeo is a national, it's a worldwide platform, you know, so it's like, mm-hmm. so you can have, you know, people in Sweden renting your movie, you know, just from the platform itself. And it does have an audience. It's not a huge audience, but it is an audience, you know? And so yeah. And also another hashtag secret for filmmakers is Vimeo. The filmmaker gets to keep 90% of whatever that rental is. So it's like, if you're renting, if you put your film on there and rent it for like $4 or $5, you know, then the filmmaker actually gets that. So it's like with Amazon, it's 50% split. So like, you know, obviously that's a lot different. And if it's Amazon Prime, the filmmaker, it's like, I think they make 7 cents per view of the film or something like that. 7 cents a view on Amazon Prime. So, which is absolutely insane. So it's like, putting it up, so filmmakers that put their stuff up on Prime first, may I just suggest that you don't do that, and perhaps rewind this and listen to what I just described, and maybe do it something like that. And I hope that somebody hears that, because I hear so many people never make any money back, you know, from their films, and that's it, and then they're done. It's like it takes so much energy to get a film made that, like, if you you know, go belly up, because it doesn't make anything if you made a wrong decision, or like your distributor makes that decision to put it up on Prime, you know, then you're screwed and you will never see money and your investors will never see money, you know, and then you're done, you know. So, and that may sound tragic, and it is. So don't do that.
Yeah.
And I have had screaming matches on the phone with distributors that, you know, for killing people's films for that reason. But I don't care. So because I only speak the truth, and you have to have a code and you have to be the truth. And that's what I do.
Yeah. And then follow your own code.
That's exactly
right.
That's
a big thing with me, because
exactly right.
A lot of people, they say, oh, they have this code, and then they go, maybe not necessarily in filmmaking, but it does happen in filmmaking as well. But they say they have this code, and but yet they don't follow their own code. Well, then why even say that you have that code if you're not going to follow it?
Absolutely.
But you do.
Absolutely.
You follow your own code.
I do. It's true. Because, you know, you can't – basically, if you say something – you gotta mean it, you know. And I think
that
it's a lost art.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, we've got almost 9 minutes left, so I was going to go over one more film. So maybe just talk about it for a couple of minutes, not too long, because we want to go back to Preacher 6, so it's fresh in people's minds about where they can go to help you promote the film. Prime Effect, it was back in 2012. I mean, I know what it's about because I've seen it, but for the people who haven't seen it, explain it to them what it was.
You know what? I don't know that we need to want to talk about this one, because I honestly don't remember what movie that was. What did I do on it?
I believe that you acted in that, if I'm not mistaken. I mean, I've seen it, but, you know, I've seen so many movies that I don't necessarily remember what every single person does.
Prime
Effect. I'm pretty sure that you played a character named Prime.
Okay. Here's what's going on here. Okay, because there's two Kyle Hesters. So, I believe that sometimes when the other Kyle Hester does something, whoever, they will put him under the wrong IMDb, and I guess he just never checks it. So, yeah. There's also something else that's on my IMDb, which I did not do, which he did. And that is the video game. What is it? It's like a first-person fighter game. There's another video game on there that I did not do. That is his. So yeah, I guess he doesn't pay attention to his IMDb.
Okay, that's interesting. Because it had your picture, so I got his messed up with your picture. Not that that doesn't happen either, but there's one friend of mine, female.
Oh, wait a minute!
Actor.
I think Prime. Okay, wait. No, yes, that was a short film. And
yeah, it was a fantasy film. They're magical creatures.
Oh man, yeah. You know what? I think I did that with We Make Movies. I have to go look at that, because there was this period of time where I was doing like a lot of short films. So yeah.
Well,
how about that? There was a film I didn't remember that I did.
Hey, you know what? You wouldn't be the first actor that had a film that you didn't remember doing. I had a guest on the show not that long ago that I mentioned a movie, and she was like, I don't remember that. And I said, well, that's okay. We don't have to talk about it. And I really don't expect every person to remember every single movie that they've been in. And sometimes I surprise people with the movies that I pick. And usually it's just at random, but sometimes I pick them for a specific reason, like, say, if I like the name of the movie, you know, like Zombie with a Shotgun, I like the name of the movie. Or if I've seen it, I'll pick it. Different reasons why I pick movies. And sometimes I surprise people with the ones that I pick. So they're like,
right on. Well, definitely go check out Bellu the Shotgun is on Amazon Prime, and it's also on Tubi. So if you get a chance, check it out. It's an interesting one. You know, I'd say it's not your typical zombie film. So, you know, have a couple of glasses of wine and just go for the ride, because that's kind of film that it is.
Just real quickly, and I know this has nothing to do with you, but I did want to say it just so people know that that's why I said what I did about IMDb, that sometimes they're not right. This actress friend of mine, she has a person that has the same name as her, and her stuff gets mixed up with the other one's stuff all the time, where hers will be on this other person's and the other person's will be on hers. And it's gotten to the point where it's so bad that she has to rebrand herself. She has to actually change her name so that this other person's stuff isn't on her IMDb.
Okay, I just
That's
remembered.
How bad.
I remember what Prime Effect is. Prime Effect, that was a 48-hour film festival film. That's why I couldn't remember it. Yeah, we did that. That was one of the 48-hour film festivals. And, yeah, I remember that. So that's so funny. I just drew a blank. But, yeah, 48-hour film festival. So that was those are always crazy, you know, because you have to get things done so quickly. It's nuts.
Right. And that's probably why you don't remember it, because you had to do it so quickly, and it was like it went just as quickly out of your brain. I don't know.
Exactly.
But we have like a little bit over 3 minutes, so if you want to go back to Preacher 6, because that is like the newest thing that you have, go ahead and repeat some of the stuff you said, like the website and how they can invest and, you know, whatever else that you want to add to Preacher 6, go right ahead.
All right. I would say for Preacher 6, to help us get it finished, please go to the Patreon, and that's patreon.com/KyleHesserActorGuy. You'll get behind-the-scenes stuff and whatnot for $3, price of a cup of coffee, and so we can get this sucker done, because I'm not going to be launching any more Indiegogos or anything like that for it. So the Patreon is the way to support independent film. So anything helps, and thank you all so much for your support with everything.
Oh, yeah, that's sweet. And another thing that I like to have people do is, you know, right here at the end, is to let people know what's the best way to contact you for whatever reason.
Okay. The best way to get in touch with me is on Twitter, and that's at Kyle D. Hester. And you can also find me on YouTube, and that's Kyle Hesterland. Or just look up Kyle Hester on YouTube, and please subscribe to the channel. And that will also be a way to keep film going forward into the future once we get that sucker monetized.
Yeah, I know that I'm interested in this film because it sounds like it's going to be really great. So we've still got like 2 minutes, but that doesn't mean we have to use the entire 2 minutes. I can close the show out early. But since we do have the 2 minutes, I was going to go ahead and ask you if there's anything that you want to say, like just in general to the general public, whether it be about filmmaking or not, anything that you would like to say in closing to anybody that's listening.
Yeah, absolutely. I would just, first of all, I just want to say thank you for having me on the show. And In addition to that, for anyone who's like wondering how to get moving on your art or the film industry or anything, just hang in there, keep going, think outside the box, and you will figure out a way and make the way that you see forward, you know, because not anyone's going to give you an answer. So just keep going and push forward and don't quit, because that's the only way that you won't do it is if you quit. So just don't quit.
Yeah, that's a very good thing to say. Wow. And I totally agree with you. Okay, so we've only got like 45 seconds, so I'm going to go ahead and close out the show. And I want to say to my guest, Kyle Hester, who is a really good actor. Check him out in some of the films that we've mentioned. Go on his IMDb and see what else he's got, and check out whatever it is that sounds interesting to you. Thank you very much, Kyle, and stay safe, and may you and yours have a nice rest of the year.
Thank you so much. To you as well.
Oh, thank you. Okay, good night.
Night.
Bye.